Continuing in Mitzvah Reish Tzadiches 298, which is the prohibition of doing Malacha specifically here on the first day of Pesach, but the Sefer Chinuch is using this opportunity to present the principles of the laws of Yontif, which are generally that anything that's forbidden on Shabbos is forbidden on Yontif, with the exception of things that are required for food preparation, of which there are many details about exactly what types of food preparation is allowed and what types are not. It's in some ways Hilchos Yontif is more confusing than Hilchos Shabbos. On Shabbos it's just, you know, don't do these categories of things. On Yontif you have all these exceptions, but sometimes exceptions don't apply and sometimes yes apply, and then it's more confusing. You have to really get the principles down in order to observe Yontif properly. Yeah, that's correct. So we have a principle on Yontif that you're allowed to light a fire, which we'll discuss a little bit more later. So you're allowed to light a fire because of the principle of mitoch shehutra litzorech, hutranami shelo litzorech. But since kindling a fire is so closely associated with cooking food, which is allowed on Yontif, so then you're allowed to kindle a fire even not for the sake of food as well.
Even from a non-existing, I mean, you could just...
So on a Daraisa level, one is allowed to strike a match and light a fire on Yontif on a Daraisa, on a biblical level. However, the Chachamim said that we're only allowed on Yontif to transfer from an existing flame because it's unnecessary to light a match, because you always could light a candle in advance. And therefore, why should you be allowed to do this extra step of lighting a fire from a match on Yontif? However, that there's a big difference that people should be aware of, which relates to something we were just discussing, is that there's a big difference between Shabbos and Yontif vis-a-vis the prohibition of striking a match. That on Shabbos, striking a match is an Isser Daraisa. It's obviously a biblical prohibition. On Yontif, it's only an Isser Darabanan. So therefore, there's a big difference when it comes to asking a non-Jew. Now, we have a principle that when there's a need for it, or a great need for it, or for the sake of a mitzvah, then you're allowed to ask a non-Jew on either Shabbos or Yontif to do something that it itself is only a rabbinical prohibition. So asking a non-Jew to do stuff for you on Shabbos and Yontif is a rabbinical prohibition. So if you ask the non-Jew to do an action that's a rabbinical prohibition, that's what we call a shvus de shvus, two rabbinical prohibitions combined. Asking a non-Jew and the fact that the thing that the non-Jew is doing is a rabbinical prohibition, and that would be allowed. So therefore, on Shabbos, you are not allowed to ask a non-Jew to strike a match for you, because that would constitute only one rabbinical prohibition, which is asking the non-Jew to do it for you, whereas the action is a biblically prohibited action. Whereas in Yontif, striking a match is only Nisr Darabanan, so in a case of great need, one would be allowed to ask a non-Jew to strike a match or light a lighter or something like that for you on Yontif. So that's why...
Turning on the light is equivalent to...
So that's the thing. So when it came to incandescent light bulbs, so incandescent light bulbs were the first types of electric light bulbs that were available, and nowadays they're on their way out, but they were the original electric light bulb. And basically, the electricity flows through the wiring, and it heats up the filament, and it makes the filament in the light bulb glow red, which is why on Shabbos the pashtus is that turning on an incandescent light bulb is an Isser Daraisa, because when a piece of metal glows to red hot, it's a violation of a biblical prohibition. That's why the simple...
On Shabbos,
it's for sure a biblical prohibition. But on Yontif, if it's really considered like fire, an electric filament in an incandescent light bulb, if it's really considered like fire, so some poskim in the original days of electricity, the early days of electricity, said as follows. Maybe they didn't really understand electricity, but maybe they did. Okay, because you can see it both ways. That the electricity is already flowing through the wires. So when you turn on an incandescent light bulb on Yontif, it's not as if you're striking a match. You're just simply, when you flip the switch, you allow the power to come in and turn on and heat up the filament and create light. So that's why they said it was not like creating a new fire. It was like lighting a fire from an existing flame, and therefore you would be allowed to turn on the electric lights on Yontif. This halachic position is basically unheard of nowadays because of others say, no, it is like creating a new fire, and others say there are other problems with electricity, like, you know, most poskim don't go like this, but you also have the Chazon Ish that says that maybe turning on electric devices is a problem of bona and soser, that you're creating a functional appliance. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in his early sefer that he wrote when he was 17 years old, called Me'orei Aish, where he took issue with his Chazon Ish. Whatever it is, we assume there are other issues with electricity that you're not allowed to do it even on Yontif. So the contemporary practice in the Orthodox Jewish community is that we treat electricity on Yontif basically the same way we do on Shabbos, with the exception, you know, that's just practically, with the exception of asking a non-Jew. So asking a non-Jew to turn on an electric light bulb on Yontif is allowed.
Let's say if you take an elevator that is electrically, an electric elevator. No. So there's no spark. There is no
glowing wire. It's running
up and
down all the time.
Why aren't you?
Well, it isn't, though, unless it is.
What do you mean? An electric elevator? You mean pushing a button and making it go up and down?
Yeah, so.
Oh, there. I don't know exactly how it works, but there's the motor and you create spark. You might create certain.
You're starting it.
Yeah.
I mean,
the normal assumption is that on Shabbos and Yontif, we don't touch electric appliances. All LCD, not LCD, screen, computer screen, nothing. You know, we don't do. We don't use electric appliances at all.
In other words, can you ask Goyt to?
Yeah, yeah, but they're about to.
What about the subway elevator that's going up and down, even with or without an operator, but it's going up and down, not of its own free will, like a real Shabbos elevator, but you follow a bunch of pretty obviously not Jewish people. It's
right.
An elevator and one of them pushes
and they're the ones who are pushing
yada yada.
Oh, it's a problem of Zilzul Shabbos, that it's just not appropriate for an activity. It's a slap in the face of the honor of Shabbos to walk publicly into an elevator in the subway and ride up and down. If someone is obviously infirm, you know, you're in a wheelchair with a non-Jewish aide, so then, or very, you know, in a walk, having a walker or something, so then there's, since it's obvious that you're using it for that purpose, so then there's room to say that maybe it's not a problem. Anyway, so electricity on Yontif, so we assume that we're not allowed to use electric appliances at all on Yontif the same way as on Shabbos, even though classically there were some poskim who permitted turning on incandescent lights on Yontif.
Okay.
The Sefer HaChinuch continues. The Ode Amru. This is also the controversy, by the way, about the Shabbos mode oven. That there was in Baltimore. So the Star K, led by Rabbi Heineman, says that if you have a Shabbos mode oven where the display is blank, and it doesn't show up, the temperature of the oven does not show up on the display, then one is allowed to raise and lower the temperature on Yontif because it's not, it doesn't show display any numbers, so it's not like writing. And all the things are invisible. They're just, you know, in the computer. That's going into the computer circuit. It is completely invisible. So there, and there's a time delay that when you press the up and down, so there's a grumma, that's it's not a direct action, but a resulting action. So for these reasons, so Rabbi Heineman wrote a tshuva that you're allowed to use the Shabbos mode oven and even raise and lower the temperature on Yontif. So if you've seen any of the from websites, so almost all the poskim are extremely up in arms about this. They almost everyone else feels that it is a problem. The simple reason is not a grumma, even if there's a slight time delay. If you're pressing a button and you expect a relatively immediate result from it, and we assume you're not allowed to use any electricity on Shabbos and Yontif, so then it is a problem, even if there's no display of the time. So then people in Baltimore, so people are big chassidim, you're allowed to do that. you're a big chassid of Rav, even though most posts can feel that he's wrong, if you do everything according to Rabbi Einem, and that's how the Torah works, you're allowed to do that. But it's really not right, because that's the thing. One thing about the Star K is that it's really a great organization. I have no problem with the organization. One thing about the Star K is that it's really and fundamentally a local Vad HaKashrus of Baltimore that gives Hechshavar. So they have their rabbi, Rabbi Heinemann, who's giving all these shittas and psukim about how the Star K can, all the halachic opinions that they should be following when they give their Hechsharim. But the problem when these local things, so in Baltimore, and you do everything like Rabbi Heinemann, so you'll have to do what he says, anything, you know, even if it's different from all the other poskim in the world. He's a reliable authority. You're not allowed to just go with somebody who's not a Talmud Chacham, obviously. So, but the problem is that if the ovens come, a firm person in Washington Heights gets a delivery of an oven, and it says Star K Hechsher allowed for use on Shabbos and Yontif, and on Yontif you're even allowed to raise and lower the temperature. They say, oh, National Kashrus Organization, they say it's okay, but the truth is that regular people should not be following this psak of the Star K, because it's disagreed with by almost everyone else.
What if you have an old fashioned oven?
You mean like a gas oven?
Yeah,
I
have a gas oven.
Right, so I'm saying you're not allowed to lower. You're allowed to raise. No, you're not allowed to lower.
It's a problem.
I'll tell you about the lowering in a second. We'll go up with the lowering in 1 minute when we finish this first paragraph. Yeah,
it's more a problem with the caterer. If caterer follows this opinion, if he's that's the thing.
Oh my god!
What do you mean, the Star K caterer?
Yeah.
If you're not in Baltimore, you're not going to.
Yeah, it doesn't forbid the food. If there's they're relying on a halachic opinion, a psak from a respected rabbinic authority. I'm not saying they go to some Joe Schmo from nowhere and they say, well, we're relying on him. He is a smicha from an Orthodox institution. If it's a recognized authority, even if his psak is questionable, so it doesn't forbid the food from being consumed. Certainly not. Yeah.
What is the line between somebody like Rabbi Heinemann described and somebody who's more off the wall, as it were? I mean, you said that nobody else holds like him. So.
No, obviously, I'm not saying 100% of everyone else, but most other normative post-game.
This is not a wise guy question. I really want to know. How is it that he still has the whatevers to be, the cred, the whatever, to be accepted, even though almost nobody else holds by it? How does that happen? Because, I mean, somebody a little bit more...
Maybe some of the other post-games say he's not. You shouldn't hold by him, even if you live in Baltimore. But that's not the way the Torah works. Okay, okay. We assume that...
Did they mean you shouldn't hold by all the kashrus?
No, but he has things with the kashrus, too. He has kulas with Bishul Akum that he holds that if there's, like, in the oven, if there's a light that provides some heat, so then if the non-Jew turns on the oven... If it's just like a little light bulb, I mean, that provides some heat, and then the non-Jew turns on the oven and starts cooking, so then if a Jew lit the little light bulb, so then it's not a problem with Bishlakim, which again,
it's not really cool.
Most other post-Kim strongly disagree with, so that's a problem. When you have, in New York, you have caterers under the Hechsher of the Star K, which is really an issue. I'm not saying b'dievid you can't eat the food, but it is a problem for people in New York to be lechatchila using these caterers, which might be relying on these kulas based on Rabbi Heinemann.
Yitzi Dykman relies on things that Rav Montel says is fine that nobody else does.
Who does?
Yitzi Dykman. And, nobody's brooding about this.
Well, there's a difference also.
In our shul, he's told not to do them, but Rabbi Schwartz says it's fine.
Well, there's also a difference between Hilchos Shabbos and Yontif, which I believe is what the kulas that you're referring to. Not in Kashrus.
Well, opening
on
Shabbos.
Okay, but that's somewhat different. That's similar to the oven, because when you, if your Shmira Shabbos and Yontif is relying on a certain Rav and other Rabbanim might disagree, so that certainly doesn't affect the kashrus of the food.
Right.
We're talking here with a Bishul Akum. Yeah, it's something that affects the actual kashrus of the food.
Right.
To the best of my knowledge, KAJ does not employ any kulas in their actual kashrus of the food. That's not, something that's extremely accepted in the postgam. That's where there really is a difference. Again, I'm not paskining you that you can't eat from a Star K caterer, because there are other kulas, tseirufim, that maybe ameliorate the Bishul Akum issue. But it's not so pleasant. So that's all I mean. That you know, a caterer that has who's under the psukim of a rabbi with unique halachic opinions, whether it should be used by the general community. I'm not saying what you had in your kid's wedding, what caterer you should and shouldn't use. This is just a general ha'ara about the current state of affairs. That is proper for kashrus organizations, even if they have rabbanim. Again, you have to have rabbanim who are making decisions. They can't be machmer on everything. I'm saying it has to be.
Yeah, they can and they do.
There's no hechsher that's machmer on everything, literally. I promise you that. There's no. I'm saying the point is that when you give a hechsher that's nationally used and recognized, you have to have some consciousness of what everybody else is doing, as opposed to. Okay.
Can you.
V'od amru dechisharina nochal nefesh b'mashanasa l'shaito kemosha amarnu, that we're on the yunt if you're allowed to do stuff that is necessary for food preparation now, like cooking as opposed to threshing. Dafka kesha'ata mishtamesh b'gufa shamalocha, that's when you use the actual labor itself. B'mishtamesh b'siluka shamalocha, or if all that you're doing is wanting the malacha to disappear, then that's not allowed. What does that mean? V'zeo she'asru zichrona levracha lechabos habekas afal bi shadaito lechabosa kedei shalot tis'ashen akderes. Let's say you have a log burning under a pot. And again, we're talking about an earthenware pot. And you want to extinguish the fire on the log in order, against tam, obviously, you wouldn't be allowed to do that on Yantif. But even if you wanted to extinguish the fire on the pot so that on the log, so that the pot over it shouldn't get all smoky, shouldn't absorb the smokiness, then you're not allowed to do that on Yantif. But on the other hand, if you have coals, hot fiery coals, then you are allowed to place meat directly on the coals to cook.
On
Yantif? On Yantif. Yantif. So because even though that the meat is going to drip juice and it's going to extinguish the coals, nevertheless, you're not using the point is not to get rid of the fire to extinguish per se, it's to cook, and it's just secondarily it happens to extinguish some of the coals. So it's because of the necessity for cooking the meat that you're allowed to do this on Yantif. So again, this is part of one of the examples of where the exceptions are like a little bit hard to wrap your mind around all the principles, but this is the way it works. So this, the Sefer Chinuch implies here, which is known, that one is not allowed to extinguish on Yantif. That some Rishonim say just explicitly, no, there's no extinguishing on Yantif. It's never really necessary for cooking. You're never ever allowed to extinguish anything on Yantif. Other Rishonim, which is the accepted psak, that if extinguishing is directly necessary for cooking to make sure that you'll have food for Yantif, then it is allowed. So, for example, you have a one burner stove, and it's on too high, and your pot is about to burn. But you don't want it to stop cooking, otherwise it's going to get ruined. Oh. So you're allowed to turn down the fire in order that your pot should not get ruined. But the pashtus is that if you have an availability to kindle another fire, as opposed to extinguishing this one, then you're required to do that, as opposed to extinguishing
kindle
this fire.
An existing flame.
Correct. Uh-huh. So the Ramosha Feinstein has a tshuva where he relearns a whole bunch of poskim, and he says you don't have to extinguish the fire. Okay. I mean, you don't have to light a new fire. You're allowed to turn down the fire. But that's also based on a certain mahalach of some poskim, which, again, some people rely on Yantif, but we don't do this anymore, and it's up there with the electricity. That some poskim felt that with contemporary gas stoves, one is allowed to turn them down on Yantif because it's not an active extinguishing. It's you turn down the gas, which shuts off the gas supply, and that automatically lowers the flame. It's not an active act of extinguishing. Yeah. So that's not an accepted psak either, because the one of the examples of kibbuy, of extinguishing, that's given by Shabbos also is that if you have an oil candle and you remove some of the flame, some of the oil from the candle, and even though it doesn't extinguish the flame right away, it's just going to go out earlier, then that is also not allowed. That's an example of extinguishing. So you might be allowed to, for example, I don't know, shut off the gas main of your house that will, you know, eventually cause the thing to run out because that's too delayed. You know what I mean? To lower the fire right at where the fire is, and the extinguishing happens immediately without any sort of delay of any even begin of discussion of grumma. So that is according to the accepted halachic opinion, is not allowed. One's not allowed to lower the gas fire on Yontif.
Even if it's not extinguished, though.
Right, that's not extinguishing doesn't just mean you completely turn it off, and even lowering it is considered extinguishing.
No, in English, extinguishing means putting it out.
Yeah, there were poskim who suggested that maybe you should be allowed to turn down the gas fire on Yontif, but that's not the accepted
psak. Are you sure you've got your air conditioner set?
No, pile light is okay to light the stove, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You could ask an anju to lower it. That's also, an option. Okay. There is also an issue with raising and lowering electric stoves. So if the electric burner, if the electricity is flowing to the electric stove, and, you know, the metal is already getting red hot, so according to some shitas, you're allowed to raise the dial and make the electric stove go hotter while the thing is already hot, because you're just adding to the fire as opposed to, it's like raising the fire as opposed to lowering it. Then you are allowed to lower it. The best of my knowledge, even though there are poskim who say such a thing, they are allowed to raise an electric fire on Yontif as well. The best of my knowledge, again, you don't have to scream if somebody doesn't do this, but the best of my knowledge, the normal practice is that we do not raise or lower any electric appliance on Yontif.
But a gas appliance, after all that's been said, I'm not sure.
A gas appliance is okay.
Yeah.
If you're lowering, right? No, not lowering. A gas stove, a gas oven or stove, you're allowed to raise the fire. Either. If it's on, the fire is on, you're allowed to raise it. That's for sure.
You're not allowed to lower it.
Correct.
Except if you've got a
lower. Unless, according to the kosher, there's a pot of food that's about to burn.
Right. Yontif is complicated, I'm telling you. It's more. It's harder to wrap your mind around the Shabbos. I have to go into details to figure out the all the principles. Okay, the Chayin Ma'asha Amr Zichronon Livracha. That what our sages say, she'ein bechlal heter tzorchei ochel nefesh, ma shehu achilo shtia levad, ela af kol davar hatzorch lo adam levo bayom. That ochel nefesh doesn't literally just mean food. It means any bodily need, which is a big discussion whether that's true or not, but this is the Sefer Chinuch's opinion. That you can bring the baby to the mohel in order to receive his bris. And if your lulav is at home, then you're allowed to bring it to the shul on Yontif in order to fulfill the mitzvah. In Sefer Torah likrosbo, you can bring out Sefer Torah. The whole yoma v'yoma zman Torah hu. Uvein she'eino dvar mitzvah ela tzorchei aguf levavayom kiyon rechitzas raglayim b'mayim chamin shuchmu b'yontif olasos medura l'schamin ba. So that includes a bodily need like washing your body. Here mentions feet because we'll discuss why in a minute. So just parts of your body. This paragraph requires analysis, so I have to get back in a minute. Kol dvarim elu mutarim uvichol heter d'ochel nefesh uvichlal heter d'ochel nefesh nenu. These all things are included in the principle of ochel nefesh. So it's funny, the commentaries on the Sefer HaChinuch point out that when he talks about how you're allowed to bring a lulav because that's considered ochel nefesh, so the way it's presented, and it seems to be in the Gemara, again, there's a whole discussion about how the Chinuch might learn a little differently, but the way it's presented in the Gemara is the machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. The Beis Shammai hold that you're only allowed to carry food on Yontif. And Beis Hillel say, they know this is an example of mitoch, that since carrying is a malacha that's associated with food needs on Yantif, taking food from one place to another, so therefore one is allowed to carry on Yantif with no restrictions, again, according to most poskim, provided that the thing is required for now, as opposed to later. If it's not, if they're not required for Yantif needs, you're allowed to carry the day of Yantif. You're only allowed to carry something that's required for the day of Yantif. So the reason for this is mitoch, and not because of ochel nefesh per se. It's funny, according to Beis Shammai, that you're only allowed to carry food on Yantif. You wonder if, you know, we have all these gzeris that are found in Masechet Shabbos, they're not allowed to wear certain things on Shabbos because, you know, it might fall off, or you might accidentally take it off and you start walking with it on Shabbos. So you wonder, according to Beis Shammai, you're not allowed to wear these things on Yantif either. We never found any restrictions on wearing things on Yantif. Okay, anyway, we passed like Beis Hillel that we're allowed to carry on Yantif for the any need of Yantif. Fine.
Of that day.
Of that day, right. Correct.
If you need not first day, for the second day, you have to wait until the day's over before you bring it or carry it.
Correct. Well, that's what I was saying. That's the difference of holding by the Erev, so to speak, on Yantif and Shabbos. That there, if you quote-unquote hold by the Erev, although I don't like that term, so you don't use the Erev. No, hold by the Erev. It's not not patent. Okay. If you don't use the Erev on... if you don't use the Erev, so then, yeah, if you carry something outside on Yantif and it's not needed for that very day, so then that's not allowed. That could be an Isur D'oraisa.
Oh my God, no.
But if you use the Erev on Shabbos in general, so then...
You just said... it's okay. If you use the Erev on Shabbos, this doesn't apply.
What I'm saying, if you use the Erev on Shabbos, then it gives you leeway on Yantif as well, that you're allowed to carry things that are not required for that day.
Oh,
so, for example, on Yantif afternoon, let's say I want to carry my keys on Yantif afternoon when I come to Shul for Mincha, and I know that I'm not going to go home again until after Yantif.
Right, because hang on.
So if I don't use the Erev, again, it might be cool as even if you don't use the Erev, okay, Seder. But the simple understanding is that I wouldn't be allowed to take my keys if I don't use the Erev. So I wouldn't be allowed to take my keys on Yantif afternoon, since I know I'm carrying them not for now, but I'm really only going to need to use them after Yantif is over for the second day of Yantif or whatever.
But if you
use the Erev, then you're allowed to take your keys, no problem.
Because
that's not considered Hotzah. It's as if you're in your house the whole time, vis-a-vis Hotzah. It's not carrying. If you hold that the whole Eruv is acceptable, then the whole enclosure is considered as the same as if you were walking around inside your house.
Okay.
I think I'm going to change my perspective about the
Eruv. Good.
That's just saying. There's a difference if you use the Erev. There's a difference on Shabbat. There's a difference on Yantif as well.
Whether it's Shabbat or not, and it's
right.
Yantif. So it's like you're in your own domain.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Then you don't have to worry about carrying anything.
Okay, that makes sense.
If you use the Erev in general, so then you don't have to worry about carrying anything on Yantif. If you don't use the Erev, then you have to worry if the things that you're carrying are actually needed for today or not.
If you're in an area where you don't normally live, let's say I'm going to my kid's house for Yom Kippur, what law applies?
Depends on whether they
well,
have
an they don't accept any Erev where they live. I don't know. There is one that
Well, Brooklyn is the same controversy as Manhattan. That's the same issue, yeah?
Okay, the question is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, am I allowed to carry... I need my pajamas in one of my daughter's houses, and it's in the other one. Am I allowed to carry it, or do I have to worry about when the day is over?
If you
accept, you have to worry.
But
you don't usually use the Erev on Shabbos there.
I'm not usually there.
You don't use the Erev in Washington Heights, and you shouldn't use the Erev in Brooklyn either. It's the same halachic issue.
They're different Erev. You might have different quarrels with one than with the other.
You might, but most people who... In theory, it's possible, but the normal approach is that the halachic issues governing Manhattan are the same as the halachic issues governing
supposing,
Brooklyn.
Supposing your kids, this is totally theoretical because they don't have kids. Supposing my kids live in wherever and they don't accept some other neighborhood and they don't accept the Erev, But I live in another neighborhood, and I accept the Arab in my neighborhood. And if I lived in their neighborhood, I would accept their Arab.
If you were there for Shabbos, then you would accept the Arab. Course, then it counts for Yontif as well. That's it's in theory. If you're never there for Shabbos, well, here this year, if you go for Yontif, you're going for Shabbos too. Right. But if you're, it doesn't really make sense. But if you accept, again, you could imagine that. You know, you would be machmir not to use the Erev on Shabbos because we're talking about an Isser Skila potentially. And on Yontif, it's only an Isser, it's only an Isser Lav and Isser Malkus. So you could imagine that you would be machmir. Somebody might choose personally to accept the stringency not to use the Erev on Shabbos, but to carry even not for the day on Yontif. But that's not normal. Normally, if you either use the Erev or you don't use the Erev, and it affects your observance of Yontif the way it accepts your observance of Shabbos.
So carrying, let's say, on one day, the examining day with the keys would be what? A midiraisa?
Possibly. According to some sheet, it's not, but it's possibly, yeah.
Okay. Although you could argue you need your keys to lock the door, so you're actually using them on that day as well.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you could argue, you can make a lot of arguments. You could say, well, it's more convenient if you have your keys with you. If you had an emergency and you needed to run home, you wouldn't have to, you know. But it's not not normal. If you use it, I mean, if you have the equipment not to carry keys on Shabbos, so why wouldn't you would use it on Yontif too? That's what I do. I put out the keys in the lock boxes in my building on Yontif the same way I do on Shabbos, because you have these issues about carrying the keys, even if it's technically mutter, that if you have other keys available, so why would you carry them on Yontif? Anyway, the Maisa, if you don't use the Erev here and you don't use the Erev there on Shabbos, so then you should treat Brooklyn as if you do not use the Erev, and you should conduct your accordance on Yontif accordingly.
So you have to wait until the next day, until the onset of the next day, which is...
Well, you could have two sets of pajamas, leave one at one house and one at the other house.
Okay. Why?
Or you could wear them.
Yeah.
Your pajamas.
Yeah, anyway. Wear them under your clothes.
You could wear them under your clothes.
There are ways around it. Or put them in a bag with something else. That's another way out.
With something else.
If you're, again, I mentioned before that if you have lots of things in a bag together, so it's one act of hutzah. It's marba bishurim. So if you, let's say you'd want a book. Let's say you're sleeping at another kid's house tonight, and you're going there in the afternoon. So you would like to read a book there. So you put a book in the bag with your pajamas. You take the whole thing. It's very easy. Anyway,
now you might not have to accept the Erev up here. Maybe you can out.
Fine. So that's... okay. So then it talks about washing one's body. So washing one's body is a difference of opinion of the Rishonim as to how exactly that relates, whether it's considered an example of Ochal Nefesh, that washing one's body is like eating, it's a basic bodily need, or whether it is an example, again, of Mitoch, since you're allowed to heat water up, say, for drinking... So you are allowed to heat water up for washing as well. In any event, so heating up water is for washing is permissible on Yontif. We have a problem, though, that the Rishonim say they're not allowed to heat up water to wash your whole body because that's not Ochel Nefesh. Oh, we'll discuss that in the next paragraph. We'll get that a little bit more, but it's relevant now, so I'll introduce it now. Which is that it's not Ochel Nefesh because it's abnormal. You don't wash your whole body all the time. That's not something that's really necessary for Ochel Nefesh.
Yes,
so if that's the case, Arbosai, if that's the reason that you're not allowed to wash your whole body in Yontif, so nowadays that washing one's whole body is very common, then it should be mutter to turn on the shower.
Yeah.
To take a... Turning on the shower is also more lenient because you turn on the tap, right? So if you turn on the tap, so it's the same action exactly as turning on the tap to wash your hands that it is for taking a shower.
Uh-huh.
You just leave the water running. It's not more heating of water. You know, and not more actions of heating water. Mm-hmm. Fine. So you're allowed... So okay, that according to that, so nowadays you should be allowed to take a shower with hot water on Yontif because that obviously doesn't apply. Nowadays, taking a shower is obviously stavar hashav v'lechol nefesh. That's something that people do all the time. It's considered a basic bodily need, so you should be allowed to do it on yantav. So we have a problem, though. There's also an issue called gezeras merchatzos. That the problem with heating up water to wash your whole body on yantav is not a problem of ochel nefesh, because like I said, nowadays it would be considered ochel nefesh. But the problem is that there was a gzera that the Chachamim said that you're not allowed to wash your whole body in hot water on Shabbos, because there was a problem that the bathhouses used to be open on Shabbos, and the keepers of the bathhouses, the balonim, used to say, oh no, this bathhouse is Shomer Shabbos, we heated up all the water before Shabbos, come, enjoy your nice hot bath on Shabbos, and it'll be a nice way to pass the afternoon, and you can use our bathhouse on Shabbos. So then it was discovered that the bathhouse attendants were not as religious as they claimed to be, and they were actually heating up the water on Shabbos. So that's why Chazal asked on Shabbos and on Yantif to wash one's entire body in hot water. Okay?
But there are no bathhouses today, so why does this still apply?
Because gzeiras apply, even if the reasoning doesn't apply anymore.
So this year with Shabbos, surely there's going to be an allowance to wash for Shabbos with a three-day yontif.
Oh. So, according to many shittas, so the gzeiras merchatzos only applies to hot water and does not apply to lukewarm water.
Oh, okay.
So therefore, according to that, one would be allowed to wash one's entire body, one would be able to take a shower in lukewarm water on yantif. The problem is that we have a minhag, which is brought down as a very strong minhag in the Rishonim, that one does not wash one's entire body on Shabbos, even in cold water. This minhag was accepted by the Jewish people, and you don't wash your entire body on Shabbos, even in cold water. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva that minhag, as with many minhagim, does not apply in cases of illness or great discomfort. So Rav Moshe says that since we have different standards nowadays of cleanliness, yeah, that if there's no other way to do it, if you're mamish sweated up, you feel disgusting, it's affecting your mental health, and really, if it's really distressing you, then Rav Moshe says that you're allowed to take a shower in cold water on Shabbos, and because the gzeiras merchatzos does not technically apply to cold water, and since we said it doesn't technically apply, according to many poskim, to lukewarm water either, it only applies to hot water, so then since you're allowed to heat up water on yantif, so according to many poskim, one would be allowed, in cases of great discomfort, one would be allowed to take a shower in lukewarm water on yantif. Okay? So that's why, with a three-day yantif, so many people avail themselves of this opportunity. If you really feel discomfort, then you're allowed to do this. A more mahudr way to do it, so to speak, would be to, you know, let the bath water run, just put it on the bathtub, and just, you know, splash yourself, you know, the areas that require the most attention to cleanliness. But it doesn't always
That's
do it.
Are you allowed to use washcloth?
No, you wouldn't be allowed, but there are things like, you know, what's loofahs? I don't know. They're loofahs that aren't so tightly packed, so that wouldn't be considered squeezing, because the water is just sort of sitting there. It's not really being squeezed out. Use your hand. Once for anyantif, you could use your hand to wash, as opposed to a washcloth. So again, if that's going to work, so just splash yourself and wash certain areas of your body. That would be better. But there are kulas about that. Okay. Umiyu davka dvarim ashovim b'chol guf adam hu shenater v'nomar shu b'chol heter zeh shel ochel nefesh. This is what we were just alluding to before, that ochel nefesh only applies to things that are normal for bodily needs. If there's something that's unusual, that people would enjoy it, so then it doesn't apply. Kigon rechitzas raglayim, so people wash their feet all the time. D'chuli alma rachzi hachi lifamim. Everybody occasionally washes their feet, at least. But let's say something like incense. So are you allowed to burn incense on Yantif? So you might think, oh, smelling, that's like ochel nefesh, it's a bodily need, so I should be allowed to burn incense on Yantif. Oh, so no. Delav guliyama megamri ki darina b'ksubes v'adai aserhu. So that people only really, you know, people who are very wealthy or, you know, very finicky and they need their incense to function properly, need their incense, therefore you are not allowed to burn incense on Yantif.
Sorry, I never do it. But.
That's definitely not ochel nefesh. Cigarettes, also classically. So classically,
cigarettes were allowed.
People smoked cigarettes on Yom Tov because it was considered a harmless pastime that almost everybody enjoyed, and it was a bodily need.
Yeah.
So classically, a lot of people were lenient to smoke cigarettes on Yom Tov. So go say, I paskin, one is not allowed to smoke on Yom Tov. Period.
Are you allowed to smoke
nowadays?
At all?
Oh, you're not. All right, that's true. Not allowed to smoke on weekdays either. That's certainly true too, because of health reasons. But I'm just saying, also the chilul yantif that it constitutes nowadays not only a danger to health, but it constitutes chilul yantif as well to smoke on yantif because it's not shavu lechol nefesh. That nowadays we know that smoking is not a bodily pleasure. It's destructive.
It is for some people.
Yeah, but people who are addicted, if they don't get their cigarette, they're going to get into all
but
sorts
that's
of
addicted.
Stuff.
That's
is,
not normal.
Oh, doesn't change my psak. It's usur to smoke on Yom Tov, period. So, period. It doesn't go by you. These people who like mugmar, who like incense, they have to have their incense or they go out of their mind. Too bad. Not allowed on Yom Tov, so you're not allowed to burn incense on Yom Tov, period. Same thing, too. Nowadays, it is usur to smoke on Yom Tov, period.
Oh, sure.
The people who do it.
No, but I mean, are there circles where they consider it permitted to, because they're not as...
As far as I'm aware, there is no posek nowadays that says that it's permitted to smoke on Yom Tov, that the people who are doing it are just thinking, oh, you know, my grandfather smoked on Yom Tov, so I'm doing it too.
Okay.
I thought there were, however, in Israel where it's more, you know, more people smoke, that there were various gedolim who decided not to say anything.
Perhaps. Right. Yes, that could be. That could be. They felt that people wouldn't listen.
No one will listen.
That's true. That's true. Could be they decided there's anything. But as far as I'm aware, there's no post that could hold that it's actually permitted on Yom Tov. I remember I once was with someone on Yom Tov, not a smoker for cigarettes. He wasn't addicted or anything. He was smoking a cigar on Yom Tov. So that's even more clearly that that's usher because that's not shavu lechol nefesh. People don't smoke cigars. I mean, again, cigarettes are... I don't think cigarettes aren't shavu lechol nefesh nowadays for sure, but I don't think cigars were ever shavu lechol nefesh. People just got this idea because you could smoke cigarettes, you could smoke cigars too.
I happen to know people, my father in particular.
That people smoked cigars on a daily basis all the time.
He didn't smoke cigarettes, but he smoked pipes and cigars. And it was clear that it was a distinct... He didn't smoke it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. You're working yourself.
Yeah.
But it was clear that he really enjoyed smoking a cigar.
It doesn't matter because cigars are an occasional pleasure. They're not something that's a normal...
It was an occasional
pleasure. I think cigars are always like an occasional pleasure. That for sure wouldn't be allowed on Yom Tov. But again, people get this idea in their heads. Oh, 100 years ago, smoking cigarettes was allowed. Smoking cigarettes allowed. Smoking cigars is the same. Smoking marijuana is the same. It's not allowed, period. You're not allowed to smoke on Yom Tov, yeah?
Cigars... Way back, it was accepted pastime to smoke cigars.
But that doesn't make it ochel nefesh. Ochel nefesh means it's a basic daily activity.
It's daily.
I don't know. I don't think it was ever such a large segment of the populace.
People would smoke everywhere, but cigars, there would be in a coffee house or whatever.
Right, which adds the argument that it was never ochel nefesh because it was cigarettes. People who smoked all the time at home, at work, and so maybe it used to be ochel nefesh. V'davka binyanim elu b'inyan shiyeh ha'inyan shave b'chol adam al inyan ochlin afilu meichel she'in derech lasos al amlochim v'asorim agdol mutal lasos also kol adam nivkol makom ikar achila dover shave b'chol nefesh. This doesn't apply. This applies to categories of things, like smoking, like washing, like what types of things would be considered shave b'chol nefesh or not. But if something is food, so then it's not subject to these distinctions of you have to consider as to whether it's shavu lechol nefesh or not. So for example, one would be allowed to shecht deer on Yom Tov, even though venison is a delicacy. People rarely have venison. Nevertheless, meat is meat is meat. You don't distinguish between various types of meat in terms of your permission to cook venison or cook a very fancy thing, which would only be enjoyed by you very occasionally. Food is food is food, and you don't go with this distinction when it comes to that.